we'd be done with fundraising for KSFR, but that turns out not to be the case. So we are going to go, you and I, for about 15 to 18 minutes, and halfway through, I'm going to take a little break and say, by the way, you're listening to the KSFR Pledge Drive, give the number. Do you, at that point, want to say anything about public radio, you know, being a good thing? Do you want to put in your 2 cents? It's fine if you do or not, whatever.
Yes, I'd be happy to.
Okay, great. So we will do that, and let me see. And, oh, so since it'll be airing on Monday morning, I will be saying Brian Fox. Do you want to be introduced as Brian Fox Ellis?
Yes.
Okay, so I'll be saying Brian Fox Ellis will be here tonight at 7 o'clock at the boardroom at Santa Fe Public Schools, blah, blah, blah.
Mm-hmm.
So, sorry. I will edit out my coughing. All right.
Get that over with.
Yeah. So, okay. So, Brian, you tell me when you're rolling, and we will start. Okay. So let me start in about 20 seconds. I'd like now to introduce Brian Fox Ellis. He will be with us here in Santa Fe tonight at 7 o'clock at the boardroom at the Santa Fe Public Schools at 610 Alta Vista Street in Santa Fe, doing a performance called Adventures with Audubon. That's part of the Santa Fe Science Cafe. Welcome to the Radio Cafe.
Thanks for having me. I'm really excited about this evening's performance.
So you do storytelling of all kinds, a broad range of topics, including many varieties of nature and folklore. You're doing this one about John James Audubon. Tell us a little bit about Audubon's life.
Well, Audubon was, in many ways, one of the first totally gonzo American wild men. He would disappear into the woods for weeks or months at a time with little more than his paints and his brushes and his paper, his dog and his rifle, and he would live off the land and collect specimens of birds. More than a dozen species, he was one of the first to scientifically describe and therefore got to name them for his friends, and was the first to paint every known species of bird in North America, 485 different species. It took him nearly 30 years. And every bird he painted, he also wrote a 5 to 10 page biography, what he called the ornithological biographies. So he's a fascinating character who was also a great writer, and so he's a lot of fun to impersonate because we know so much about him. He kept journals everywhere he went.
Originally, he was French, and he was a draft dodger. He came to the United States on a fake passport.
Well, he was born on the Isle of Santo Domingo, which today we call Haiti. His father was involved in the slave trade, and when the slaves of Haiti had an uprising, his father took him back to France, where he was raised. And then, yes, during the Napoleonic Wars, even though his father was an officer in the Navy, and I love to say maybe because his father was an officer in the Navy, he knew that not all war was just and did not want to lose his son to this, you know, egomaniacal Napoleon. And so he smuggled his son out of the country and set him up on a farm on Perkaman Creek near Philadelphia, which, you know, the Audubon family had owned for a while. Actually, John's father was friends with George Washington, and we must not forget the French helped us win our revolution before they had their own. And his father, you know, smuggled in military supplies for the American Revolution, helped to run the British blockade, and brought troops and mercenaries as well.
So Audubon got really interested in birds very early on. Do we know anything about it? I mean, it seems like it was clearly a life obsession.
When he was very young, he began to draw the birds of France, and he tells a couple of apocryphal stories about the possibility that maybe he studied with David in Paris as an artist, but it was when he came to America as a young man in 1803 that he really began to paint the birds of America in earnest. And there are several kind of funny stories about his early paintings. I love to say that, you know, at first, and in character, I would shoot a bird and I would lay it on the table and draw it as best as I could, but my early paintings looked like a dead bird lying on a table. So several times he would take his entire portfolio and throw it in the fire start again until he came up with his own unique method that was kind of a mix of taxidermy. You know, he'd shoot a bird and then wire it into the position he wanted. And then he would make like a pen and ink sketch. He would use watercolors for color. He was really what today you would call a multimedia artist. I mean, he used, you know, oils and watercolor and pen and ink and pencil and egg whites and whatever he could to get the right textures and colors for his gorgeous paintings.
It really reminds us that there was an era before photography where you couldn't do stop action, photography, drawing. You actually had to kill the thing. You couldn't draw it from nature because it wouldn't sit still for long enough.
Right. All of his paintings are signed, or the prints, which is what he sold, drawn from nature by John James Audubon. And that's because, you know, he did go out into the woods and he would collect the specimens. And you're exactly right. Without, you know, the kind of optics that we have today, there was no way he could create the kind of imagery and the detail. He drew not only every single feather, but on many of the birds, he drew every shaft and ray and barb and barbule of every feather. The detail is simply astounding.
And as a result, they're very much sought after today, and they are a pretty interesting combination of what we might call science and art.
Well, that's probably what he's most known for, that he was the first to kind of radically transform what we thought of as scientific illustration and to take it from, you know, the most boring, flat, lifeless scientific image to real art. And as he said, he was always trying to tell the story and capture the life of the bird, to capture the drama. And so I'm looking at the yellow-rumped warbler, which hangs in my office right here in front of me. And he drew the male, the female, and the immature. So it's scientifically accurate. You learn a lot about this warbler. But you can see the male and female kind of courting each other. And the male is perched on this beautiful iris. He was even invited to be the president of the American Botanical Society because there were dozens of new specimens of plants that were discovered in his paintings because he paid so much attention to detail.
That's quite amazing. Now, the way he turned these out, it became a business for him. It's a business today, but it became a business for him within his own lifetime.
He struggled like many artists in his early years, but then he published this set, and you would buy a subscription. So every couple of months, you would get 5 prints, and eventually it was 435 prints in the complete Double Elephant portfolio. And admittedly, on those first sets, he barely broke even because they're so expensive to produce. But that's what made him famous, really earned his reputation. And then he produced what they call the Royal Octavo. Octavo is an 8 because you would get 8 prints on one large sheet of paper. And so those would be more like a regular coffee table book. And the Royal Octavo editions are where he made his fortune. And because his wife put up with him for all those years, he bought her 20 acres of Manhattan Island with the money made from that.
I guess the family didn't hold on to it.
No. He passed away, and she sold off parcels to help support herself in her final years, which is in part why the Audubon Society is named what it is, because she would tutor the children of wealthy neighbors as a way of supporting herself. And one of her students was George Bird Grinnell, who went on to become a famous Western artist. And George Bird Grinnell was instrumental in founding the Audubon Society. And it was because of him, in large part, that the Audubon Society got its name. Because, you know, as a little boy, he remembered hanging out in Audubon's house and looking at this gorgeous artwork. And that kind of inspired him to become an artist. And then when he was involved in trying to save endangered species of birds, he thought, what better but to name them for America's first great wildlife artist?
We're talking to Brian Fox Ellis, who will be performing tonight at 7 o'clock at the boardroom of the Santa Fe Public Schools at 610 Alta Vista Street here in Santa Fe. Just take a little break right now. The number here in the KSFR Fund Drive is 505-428-1393, 428-1393, and you can make your contribution to KSFR. We will be finished if you make your contribution now. We've been fundraising for a while, and we have to keep doing it until we reach our goal. And Brian Fox Ellis, are you a public radio listener?
Very much so, and I've been a member of most of the public radio stations in the towns where I have lived throughout my life. I love to tell this story. When I was teaching seventh grade in Charlotte, North Carolina, I was hired to teach science, which is my specialty, and I feel very qualified to do that. But then early in the first semester, the principal realized her numbers were off, and so she bumped me to social studies, which, being a storyteller and world traveler, she felt I could do, and I'd like to think I did an okay job, but it wasn't my specialty. And we studied Africa and Asia through seventh grade social studies, and it seemed like every day I'm driving to school, NPR had a piece on the country that I was going to be teaching that week.
That's funny.
So it became my blessing and my guide through the year. And really, you know, NPR does wonderful in-depth news and analysis of foreign news that we often miss in the American press. And so it was a great boon to me as an educator and for my class. So I've always been a big fan and a member of stations in the various towns where I've lived over the years.
505-428-1393 is the number, 505-428-1393. If you're calling from out of area, you can call 1-866-907-5737. That's 1-866-907-KSFR. So make your contribution now, ladies and gentlemen. We do not want to be fundraising all year. We want to get it done with as soon as we possibly can. When you make your contribution, that means that shows like this mean something to you. And then we can go on to our regular programming. Let's return to Brian Fox Ellis and his work about John James Audubon. So Audubon made, I mean, it is really extraordinary that somebody at the time he did, I mean, middle of the 19th century, a comprehensive catalog of the birds of North America. How much classification work had already been done? I mean, what was he using as his own sources to figure out what was, you know, when he got to the last one?
Well, that's a great question, because I've had a similar conversation around a different character. I also play Charles Darwin. And last time I was in Santa Fe was around Darwin's was the anniversary of Darwin's birthday. It was, you know, earlier this year. And at that time, we weren't even sure what a species was. And Alexander Wilson was a Scottish immigrant who began painting the birds of America and died before he finished. And Wilson frequently made mistakes where, for example, you know, a yellow-rumped warbler, which I'm looking at here in my office, the difference between the male and female is somewhat stark, and the difference between the immature and mature, and the difference between the spring plumage when they're in mating colors and the fall plumage is also different. And so Wilson and some of the other ornithologists would think they had five different birds, when the truth is it was spring or fall or male or female or immature, all the same species. And so Audubon was meticulous in trying to carve out those differences. And I would say that he was an amazing taxonomist, because it was still relatively new. And yes, he did make a few minor errors, but considering that, you know, 485 species of birds, he was right many, many more times than he was wrong. So that's a great question, and that's one of the things that really fascinates me about Audubon, is he was a brilliant artist, he was an amazing scientist, and part of the performance, in all of my characterizations, I believe science is a verb, it's an activity, something you do, and so I engage the audience in scientific inquiry, where, for example, with the Darwin show, we're talking about geology of South America, and I show them the evidence, and they have to draw their own conclusions. With the Audubon show that I'll be doing tonight, there are several moments in the show where we talk about owls hearing, or about, you know, how do you know what feather this is? And I pose these questions to the audience and engage them in hands-on on scientific inquiry. But because that's how Audubon worked. I mean, these people were living scientists, and so I want to model that process as well. So it's also a fun interactive program in that regard.
Audubon was about a generation older than Charles Darwin. Did his work lay any of the groundwork that Darwin and other scientists built on?
Again, a great question, because in Darwin's Origin of Species, the work is almost entirely his own. Darwin was a fascinating man whose meticulous science is virtually irrefutable. But he mentions one scientist in the book twice, and that's John James Audubon. When Darwin was a young scientist working in London, he was a secretary of the Royal Geological Society, Audubon was a guest lecturer, and Darwin made comments on Audubon's lecture. And Audubon traveled in North America when this was wilderness and, you know, published articles in scientific journals in Europe. And I would like to believe that that might have had an inspiration on Darwin going to South America to collect new specimens and to kind of do this gonzo wilderness travel for several years. And so, yes, I do believe there was a very direct inspiration, and there's no doubt the two men met and talked, and that they, at least Darwin was familiar with Audubon's work. By the time Darwin was publishing, Audubon was getting on in years and actually suffered from dementia his final years. So I don't know that Audubon read Darwin, but we definitely know Darwin read Audubon.
Now, you just referred to Audubon as a scientist. Was he actually a scientist as well as an artist?
Yes. Unequivocally, yes. But you have to understand, in their day, there was no such thing as a trained professional scientist the way we think of it today. Most scientific discoveries were made by what today we'd call amateurs. But, you know, they did have training. They apprenticed with elders who taught them taxonomy. They participated in public debate and published articles. And so they were working scientists, though, you know, they didn't have the kind of university degrees that we would think of qualifications to be a scientist today. Darwin's degree was in divinity. He studied to be a minister.
That's right.
And science was more than a hobby, obviously, but in his early life, he thought it was just that, a hobby.
Now, I imagine you'll be showing some of the images of the birds during your performance.
Yeah, I travel with a museum-quality portfolio, some of the better prints. I actually have about 24 in my personal collection right now, and I don't always bring all of them, but I bring enough so the audience gets a real flavor for these double elephant portfolio images. Every bird Audubon painted was life-size, and so I have a good variety from the tiniest hummingbird to the bald eagle, you know, songbirds, shorebirds, waterfowl.
Now,
I'm
of course,
also an avid birder, so.
Oh, okay. I mean, another part of this, of course, is that you are taking on the persona. So there's a real theatrical element to this. How did you develop Audubon's persona? I guess you had a lot to work with, but you still had to come up with his voice and his accent and his gestures.
Yeah, there's some wonderful descriptions of Audubon when he was in Europe trying to sell his art. He took on this persona of the American backwoodsman. Now, some historical scholars will claim that Mark Twain was the first American to create this persona of an American to help sell his writing. But I say that Audubon preceded him by a generation. And Audubon told apocryphal stories about squirrel hunting with Daniel Boone. And you also have to understand the historical context. James Fenimore Cooper was one of the most popular authors in Europe, the American, writing about the Last of the Mohicans and the American wilderness. James Fenimore Cooper was wildly popular in European circles. So Audubon rode that wave, and he came dressed in buckskin. He impersonated bird songs, which I also do in my performance. And so I have these extensive notes from Audubon about his programs that he delivered in Edinburgh, Scotland, and London, and Liverpool, and Paris, France. And so I'm kind of recreating that you know, a little bit of a huckster showman who's telling these wonderful and very humorous stories about my travels in the wildest places in America to help kind of win over the audience. So hopefully they'll buy some of my art and I can support myself. and so it's a really fun program. And for me, probably the funnest thing is there's something for everybody. You know, if you know nothing about birds, I promise you'll learn something. But even, you know, PhD ornithologist, I've just last week was at a conference in Kearney, Nebraska for the crane migration. And, you know, even with PhD ornithologist, Audubon's writing has incredible depth, and they come away learning something as well. And, you know, like I've already mentioned, there's hands-on science. I play Name That Tune, where I impersonate bird songs. There's great art. I kind of set up this gallery on stage so the audience can kind of soak in this wonderful diversity of work.
So this is definitely a performance for all ages. It's tonight at 7 o'clock in the boardroom of the Santa Fe Public Schools. That's at 610 Alta Vista Street in Santa Fe. For more information, you can call 603-7468. Brian Fox Ellis, it's just been great having you on the air, and we look forward to seeing you tonight.
Great. And I will just close by saying I'm sponsored this evening by the Science Cafe, which this is the second time they've hosted one of my programs. And it's a wonderful organization that sponsors an ongoing series of kind of community dialogues with the wealth of scientific wisdom that's in the Santa Fe area. And then occasionally they bring in outside guests like me. So
we do just about everybody who's who's doing an event is on this show. So we want to thank Bob Eisenstein, who's really made it all happen.
Yes.
And thanks to you, Brian Fox Ellis.
Great.
Okay.
We'll see you tonight.
Excellent.
Thanks.
Bye-bye.
Bye.
Okay. Brian Highhill. So save that, upload me a copy of it. And you know, save it when you upload it, upload a high quality MP3, and then do that. And I've got all these people here. I've got way too many people to sit at one table, so I think I'm gonna play musical chairs with them, and we'll start around 2:30 or so. I'll just, you know, they're all over in the other side of the room, so I gotta assemble them and get it going here. Okay.